Good Wednesday, everybody.
Good morning, everybody.
Oh, we're up to episode 190. We're away from the big 200.
I was going to say, I was just realizing that next week we hit that big 200 mark.
And, you know, Dan and I have been talking secret plans about how to make the day special. But
yeah.
You could.
So far, we've failed at all of our special number days.
That's true. But this is going to be different somehow.
Yeah.
Good morning, Kathleen and CK and everyone else who's watching. There's always people lurking. Never speak.
Yeah, which is great.
Lying wait in the shadows. Today we're continuing our series on Jesus Hates Capitalism. And which we acknowledge is like, well, who are we to speak for Jesus? It's kind of an educated guess.
Right.
But there's reason to believe that Jesus hates capitalism. but before we dive in, I guess we should introduce ourselves as usual. I'm Mark Van Stunek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Mm-hmm. And so where we thought we'd pick up the conversation for Monday is around this this very loaded word, which is work. Mm-hmm. Because on Monday, as we were talking about this, you know, that was coming up, different people were saying different things. And it was like, well, you know, is it okay to work? You know, what is that? You know, don't you have to sort of work? What does this mean? And this is a word that we have become highly confused about. Which, as I was saying before the show, this is a great way to see our formation in action. Right? We've talked mm-hmm. a lot about formation and how we're kind of programmed into these particular worldviews, and this is one great way that you can see it in kind of real time. is when you begin to think about this definition of this word and how we feel about this word when it comes up. How we feel when we don't work, when we do work, and so basically under this capitalist system, we have been programmed to believe that working in a job for a wage is kind of the highest good and the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you can see this when you look at, like, as kids are growing up. I mean, how many times, how many times do kids hear from their parents, like, you got to get a job, you got to get a job, you got to get a job. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, that's more of a mantra than any spiritual teaching in our society. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's all murky because everything has gotten abstracted. So, you know, I was reading up on philosophical definitions of work, as one does. And I was reading a little bit of Hannah Arendt does all sorts of stuff. And she tries to break out into categories of action, work, and labor. But I just want to talk about the work and labor part. So before the modern age, we had an understanding that labor is kind of you have to do a certain amount of labor just to survive. It's not good or bad. It's just the stuff you have to do. And you should only have to do as much of it as you need. And then there's work, which is on top of that, is the stuff of creating things that you need to create society. And that's where you can maybe find some meaning. But those are kind of two different tasks, but those are all smooshed together. In capitalism, it's all obscured. Like, we don't think that somehow, like, think about right now what's happening with essential workers. Those are the people who do the labor that we need to survive. And they kind of have to do it for their work. But they're paid less than people whose work is not as essential for humanity. We don't have a way of, and we don't have any, but the moral load we put on it isn't whether or not it's beneficial. It's about how much income it generates. So that's why you end up with CEOs who actually don't work or even labor as much, making so much more and being valued more. Even though we know many of them are leeches on society.
Yeah, and you know, and another way to kind of see this is some of the reaction to the conversation about capitalism being a problem, right? Is it's sort of like what we ran into a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about, you know, well, if there was, you know, atheism or whatever, then everybody would be eating babies. There's kind of this idea. There's kind of this idea that tasty. If there's no capitalism, everybody would just be like lying on the ground, you know, doing nothing, like leeching off of some mythical person all the time, right?
Yes.
Which is ridiculous, right? And one of the best ways that you can see this is in terms of the entire issue of housework and childcare, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, for hundreds of years within this system was not given a monetary value. And so in many ways, it was not even called work.
No.
Right. And so, you know, it was largely women that were staying home. And when you say, well, do you work? People would say, well, no, I'm a housewife. Now, anybody that's raised kids and tried to keep a house clean knows that, like, that's some of the hardest work there is.
There's a reason we put off cleaning our houses. Right. Some people, there are weird people who really enjoy it. I don't want to make a value judgment, but like most people don't, they avoid it because we know it's labor. It's not fun.
Yeah. And so, you know, the truth is that people like to do things, you know, I mean, people like to, and people mostly like to create, right? People are, enjoy creating. So people like to create, they like to engage with their environment. And the notion that if we didn't have capitalism, nobody would do anything, it's just laughable. But people go to that. I mean, you see it all the time, right? Like, oh, if we had socialism, nobody would do anything. it's just so funny.
It's because it just shows how much programming has been plopped into our heads.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't make. There's all sorts of. There's still part of the problem is the area of work and labor has been entirely moralized, and we don't even talk about it like that. So, like my father-in-law, who passed away a few years ago, was a stay-at-home father, and so he, you know, as bad as it is for women to be looked down upon for being stay-at-home parents, my father-in-law got a lot of shit and was seen as a bad person. Mm-hmm. Because of that, right. To this point where now, like before, we were talking about how I was mentioning that during the kind of the era of the Russian Revolution, when worker unions were much more powerful, you had people like Peter Kropotkin saying that the goal was for workers should only have to work 20 hours a week, 6 months out of the year, and how that seems absurd. Like we would like, what? That's lazy. You have moral. And Dan was bringing up how at the advent of the computer age, everyone was talking about how we'd have to work less. And now we have that with robots. The question, we don't even say that now. Like now we know that automation is going to take over more and more work. No one expects anymore that we would somehow be able to work less. Now we have this realization, look, if all these low-level workers are replaced with robots, then how do we keep them from dying on the streets? Because if they can't work... they don't get deserve the right to live.
Right.
That's where we're at as a society. And that is novel. That is not a common, you know, that throughout most of history, it was not the assumption that somehow if you didn't have work that you deserve to die. That wasn't like even in feudal times, like that wasn't, this is because we've so tied in our human deservedness to exist with moral ideas, with work, that we're just fucked up. By it.
All right, we got a lot of comments.
Gus is saying you should attach a Facebook fundraiser to the episode posts for the 200th episode. I mean, this is largely an automated system, but maybe I can look into to do that.
Yeah. Our attempts to raise money have also failed dramatically. We've gotten a few nice donations, which we appreciate, but. You know, we're nowhere near we originally set our goal. We were laughing about like 12 million.
Yeah.
No. We're nowhere close to that.
By the time the Earth is consumed by the sun, we may have reached 12 million. From your perspective, you always should always consider having Catherine make puppet versions of you two and use the puppets in your place for special. I'm down for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Count me in. I'm just partly because I want to know what a puppet version of me looks like.
I'm not sure I do, but I'd be willing to try it. CK had a question up before there.
Oh, yeah. But also, I realized that we kind of have a Bert and Ernie thing going a little bit. Like, this is rounder, yours is a little longer.
That's true. That's true.
CK writes, are there any other religions that hate capitalism? Well, most of them, I would say, have some fundamental issues within their framework with capitalism, except for the ones that have developed in the modern era. Like, so Mormonism, I would say, is not anti-capitalist, for example, because that's a new world creation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the spiritual life in general is against any exploitative economic system, because that fundamentally dehumanizes people. And the purpose of the spiritual life is to humanize all of us. And one of the really, it's kind of a funny thing to me, is that in the West, over time, by far the most successful economic system for uplifting the poor has been the socialist collective of the Christian monastic system. And yet that has been kind of consistently ignored as an economic model for how society should be set up. So it's kind of like lurking there in the background, but people just see it as being about spirituality. And so they don't pay attention to the economic piece.
I thought of an even more, probably the most pro-capitalist religion would be Scientology, I'm thinking.
For sure.
Catherine writes, it's wild to me how much staying alive labor is devalued in our society or even made into something individuals have to pay to do for our own households. Example one.
No. No. Yeah, I mean, you know, every single, because capitalism is not about producing good for society, it's about capital, which hence the name. The labor is not the point. I mean, and this is the funny paradox, right? So we brainwash people into thinking that labor is the point. Right, you're a good moral person. You have to work. That's a sign of your morality.
If you overwork, you're virtuous.
And if you overwork, you're even better. Right? Yeah. But at the same time, for the owner class, the work is not the point. The point is making money. And the only way to do that is to get the people on the bottom to work for less. So the actual work is always devalued in these systems.
And the only exception is, like, somehow if you're rich enough, then leisure becomes virtuous. Like, I was reading these, I always get curious reading these Where Are They Now kind of articles about actors that haven't been acting for a while. And almost always, if they haven't acted for a while, they'll say they've decided to focus on their family and their children. And in that context, it's kind of virtuous. It kind of reminds me of the ideal of the Roman emperor, if he were to retire before dying, the ideal was to go live in a cottage and grow cabbages. It was kind of this reoccurring motif. And so, like, yeah, leisure then, in that case, if you've worked hard enough to become fabulously rich, is okay. But enjoying leisure if you're a regular worker is because you're lazy and trying to take advantage.
Well, and that's the concept of retirement, right? That this is, it's almost this, you know, Christian heaven model. Like, if you work hard enough and you manage to live and you make it to retirement with enough, you know, then you can relax, right? Just when, you know, illnesses and all kinds of other stuff are creeping into your life.
You have to earn the right to leisure, which is and recreation, rather than assuming that recreation and leisure are the default and that work is something you do to make it help so that you can do that. Like you do the work to so that you can enjoy family and friends and community and creation and joy. But instead, those are like held off, like you can only if you earn it. It's a horrible way to think about things. And that's why ableism is rampant and why every person I've known who I've lived with who's been on disability has been scrutinized and judged. It's a totally perverse and warped system, this capitalist thing. Kathleen writes, I have been hearing that college students today report that they are only there because they hope it'll get them a better job. I find it sad that we can't learn just for the joy of learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and not just college students, but the entire college system. I mean, the whole notion of learning as being helpful for society, which is the basis of liberalism, is almost totally wiped out, right? It's now purely technocratic. And this is why, you know, literature departments are wiped out, art departments, music departments, I mean, all these things, social sciences, you know, because you can't get a job. Mm-hmm. And so the notion of having an informed citizenry that, you know, knows the difference between a vaccine and a conspiracy theory, we don't care about that anymore. And we are reaping the consequences of that in a big way.
Kathleen writes, cleaning other people's houses is kind of
Catherine.
Fun. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Catherine, sorry. In as much as working very hard can be fun and satisfying, but only with podcasts, which in some ways the sad capitalist version of working alongside friends who tell stories. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of the things, Catherine, that we were also talking about beforehand. And again, we can see how this wiring is baked into ourselves. Is how many people, aside from even all the moralizing stuff that we've talked about, which is what drives a lot of the formation, if you talk to people about relaxing and hanging out, like people get nervous, you know, and people say, well, I can't sit still and I don't know how to just have a conversation. And you know, and you see these people that have to kind of keep moving and keep doing things and sort of scurrying about all the time, right? And I mean, this is literally now baked into our biology, the notion that, I mean, for some people, the idea of a month-long vacation is actually terrifying because they can't even imagine what they would do for that period of time. And if you go on a long time of retreat or vacation or whatever, you can experience that in your body. Like it takes a long time for your nervous system to kind of flush out that compulsion.
Yeah. When I've taken like long retreats by myself, the first time I did, I felt like I had failed. And then I read up on it, like the first day or two, you're supposed to let yourself get irritated and sleep as you take naps at weird times and you feel like you're detoxing. Right. Before you can even get to the point where you can handle being alone in silence without having to do anything. Which is, by the way, like this is a little plug. I've been working on this slowly, this inaction planner idea, which people think I'm joking. Like I've been working on this way. Instead of a day planner, you plan your day, you figure out how to do nothing every day. Like, and not even like centering prayer, nothing. I mean, nothing. Like just looking out the window, nothing. And people think it's a joke. And I'm like, no, we really need to learn how to do nothing before we can learn how to do a meaningful something.
Yeah.
So that you're not reacting out of these sort of programmed stimuli, which are kind of evil, forcing us to do things that are against what is beneficial for ourselves and others. And it's no wonder that we don't know how to take care of ourselves or to like stop if we see a beautiful flower and look at it for a while, be like, no, I gotta go check the mail. Like, we are harassed by capitalism in this system. Get into these comments. CK writes, work is synonymous with life, like education. If you don't get an education, you can't get a good job. And if you can work and you won't be able to, if you can't work, you won't be able to survive. This has indoctrinated us in us from kindergarten till death.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, hi, you know, my name is Mark. Hi, I'm Dan. Well, what do you do?
What do you do? Is the first question.
And I've seen people try to change it up, like say, well, you know what I do is I say, what gives your life meaning? If you do these alternative things, you look like some sort of crackpot. Right. Because really, somehow we can't even conceive of a normal way of talking about what gives your life passion besides saying, well, then it's always been hard for me because I've intentionally tried to choose meaningful work that isn't really super productive in the capitalist system and also not very quantifiable in money making. So when people ask what I do, I always get confused look on my face because I don't even know where to begin to explain it. Because in our society, spiritual work is weird and it's not productive and it doesn't help with capitalist systems.
Well, and I talk about all the time about how, you know, it took me 25 years to come up with an answer to that question that I liked. And when I tell that to people, they look at me like I must be joking or that, you know, I'm
no, you just come off
saying an idiot.
I'm a student of the spiritual life. Well, that sounds like.
right. So finally I found what it is and people just look at me like, yeah, I don't know what that means, but.
No, I'll tell people I'm a spiritual provocateur and they're like, what the fuck? You know what I'm talking about?
Shut up,
pretentious. Karen writes, UBI.
Yeah, and you know, I saw a thread on this the other day on Facebook. I think it had 128 comments.
Is that was that Oren's post?
Yeah, that was Oren's. And you know, it's just amazing. You know, this is, again, a great example where you can see our programming kick in. I mean, you mentioned this universal basic income
people
lose their minds. I mean, it's just, and again, it's like the eating babies thing, right? People just immediately go, oh my God, everybody will just be lying there in a coma and nothing will happen, and the government will just having to be rain down money on them. It'll be a complete disaster. And, you know, it really, I mean, we have to critique and examine these images that come to mind when we're triggered by these concepts and go like, wait a minute, is this some sort of universal truth that's baked in, or is this some, you know, giant sack of crap that I've been handed and indoctrinated into? It's, you know, universal basic income is the way all human societies have worked until very recently, right? I mean, you had groups of people, they gathered plants, they killed an animal, and they shared them, right? And, I mean, that's the way that it worked. And, you know, this is not some impossible dream that's never before existed on the planet.
Well, you can see this in real time, and this is one of my favorite little case studies. Is there was this anarchist writer who started some of the first magazines, anarchist magazines in the United States, but he grew up as a colony Mennonite in the Ukraine named Abraham Isaac. And the reason he became an anarchist is because he noticed, like, within his lifetime, the Mennonite communities in the Ukraine went from being just self-sufficient and collectivist to you started having some of the people using their surplus grain. Instead of sharing it, they would sell it on the markets to get profit. And so then all of a sudden you started having a wealth gap. And in his lifetime, you started end up having homeless Mennonites because of this introduction of capitalist systems. And so that drove him out of his colony to look for how to live out his ideals. And he ended up becoming one of the founding anarchist, like, pioneers in the United States, publishing articles about polyamory and stuff in 1893. So it's just bizarre, like, you think about that chasm. And we've kind of gotten to this point where the entire logic of why we work has been flipped. So now, if we have universal basic income, people get upset because we have a morality based on resentment. Like, why should people get stuff if I'm doing all this work and I hate it? Right. let's just interrogate that. Like, one, you know, it shows that you hate your work. It shows that you want people to suffer because like you suffer, and there's nowhere in there is the morality based in some sort of what is best for me in society.
No.
See how morality gets flipped and subverted by this way of thinking.
All right, we've got a ginormous number of comments, so we need to start rolling.
Okay, James writes, I think so. Judaism has a long socialist tradition, even if not the majority position today.
Right. Yeah, this is about other religions hating capitalism. Yep.
Seymour writes, the talking point that everyone should be useless without capitalism, would be useless without capitalism, does not come from the people. It's such an obviously top-down idea, clearly to advantage those of the that capitalize off of work, for sure.
Yeah.
But propaganda exists from the top. Yeah. The idea being at the core that everyone should be useless to me. Everyone would be useless to me. Yeah. So no. I can't benefit from you in your labor, and I can't exploit you, so it's bad. James writes, most Native American traditional religions are not compatible with Christianity or with
capitalism.
My reading skills are off right now. are not compatible with capitalism, Buddhism too, for sure.
Yeah.
This is why we see this huge growth industry of turning spiritual traditions into capitalist mechanisms. Why wellness as a category needs to be interrogated. Because we should care for ourselves, but when religion gets baked, like flipped into wellness, then it becomes a tool for productivity. It's messed up. Neil writes, I feel like a challenge has been extended to any and all puppet makers in the listening audience.
Yep, make puppets of us.
A challenge has been issued. James writes, some of my Mormon friends see a cooperative economic model as the ideal, in part from many different Mormon enterprises and their emphasis on community preparedness. All things that don't mesh well with capitalism. Yeah, and I know some Mormon Marxists and Mormon anarchists, but I think we could have a conversation over whether or not Mormonism at its core is more pro or friendly towards capitalism or not. I guess, but I don't want to overstate it. Seymour writes, continued. The really tragic part is that workers who spew that rhetoric, even the fairly well-to-do ones, think that it's their own idea. And it's really just a way they've been socialized to respond. It's really heartbreaking that people can't differentiate the voice of socialization and their own individual thought. Oh my God, we can. So much.
Yeah, and also, you know, how we don't even notice how our brainwashing changes, right? So, you know, I see this a lot in traditional farming communities where, you know, it used to be, especially in places that had very harsh winters, that in the winter, you know, farmers and farm families did not work a whole lot. That was just normal, right? I mean, you hung out, and you cooked, and you repaired some equipment. You kind of went out and did some fun stuff. You know, you went skiing, or, you know, then snowmobiles got invented. People went snowmobiling, and there was time for all of that. Now there's less and less time, and people feel like they got to work year round the clock, and they don't even notice how that's changed in their minds and how they've been, you know, completely retooled to all of that.
Think about just, you know, that farm kind of pattern isn't as pervasive in our collective imagination anymore, but teachers getting summers off. Oh, it's amazing how much moralizing there is, like, oh my God. You want to get paid more than $30,000 a year? You don't even have to work the summers. Like, they're kind of this weird shitty resentment towards teachers, like, which is dumb because teachers work ridiculously hard throughout the year. And then sometimes they have to pick up summer stuff. But even their summer's off, it isn't this it's not this glorious, like, fun job. There's a reason there's a teacher shortage. Gus writes, there's a feminist economist, Hazel Henderson, who really developed ideas around the underground economy as actually part of the economy. She uses a graphic of a layer cake and points out that only half of the cake is measured by the GDP. The rest is treated as if it has low or no value. That's totally seems like the capitalist game is to obscure where most of the value and labor comes from. And then just focus on the stuff that is most exploitative and on the top. Jeremy writes, somehow there's the belief that if a person owns the capital, that they also own the labor by default.
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding. Bing, bing. That's the thing. It's kind of seen as a trade. So if you're a laborer, your body is the capital. And you have to trade your body for resources. And we can't, like, at this point in our society, we don't realize how exploitative that is. Unless we're talking about sex work, mm-hmm. then somehow magically, then it somehow becomes exploitative.
Yeah,
a lot. We could say a lot more about that. But Seymour writes about actors who have taken times to themselves. There's also the way many people who leave their industry are talked about as having let go or are weirdo recluses or have gone crazy, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of negativity about that. You know, you see these interviews like, well, why did you stop working for all those years? No.
James writes, I think it's worth noting that the ways that leisure functions in social societies. During my times visiting Cuba, I'm always awed by the amount of free time people have and the social acceptance of not being too busy. But it also helps that they prioritize recreation, especially making it available for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When I remember, you know, when we took our year traveling around the world, I mean, we met all these people, mostly from European countries, who were very intentional about working some and then traveling, taking these very low budget trips. We were on the extremely low budget tier of travelers. And I remember other Americans hearing about this, you know, that we met and just being completely freaked out. Like, how is this possible? Like, I don't even understand. Like, this is why would you choose that life? And be like, well, because it's great.
No, weirdly, this is where you get all like, that's the reason why America's number one. And if,
right.
Exactly. And if you point out, like, well, those other countries, they have a better standard of living and they're happier and they have nicer roads and stuff. And they're like, that's lies.
Just ignore that. Yeah.
CK writes, The Theory of the Leisure Class, an Economic Study of Institutions by Torsten Veblen, is a treatise on economics and a detailed social critique of conspicuous consumption as a function of social classes. Yes. I was kind of stunned for a second because a book recommendation from someone other than Gus was confusing for a moment. But thanks for that. That is a kind of a classic text. James writes, even activities we think of in our society as being purely personal are treated as communal activities there, with many people making a point of opening their blinds while watching TV so neighbors can see what is on and might just come in and watch for a while. Whoa, that's so un-American.
You know, I'd just like to point out from a process point of view, like, look at transmission. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we're not getting paid for this, basically. And, you know, for me, this has been one of the most fun things that I've done ever. Right. And this is great. And, you know, I get to be with a dear friend talking about things that we like to talk about. And I get to be with all these other dear friends, you know, these awesome comments from people. Mm-hmm. And we're all just hanging out together. And this is meaningful work. Right. But from a capitalist point of view, you know, this is shit. Like, you know, you guys are doing a bad job of, you know, you're not making money. You're not capitalizing on this. You don't have enough likes and tweets and posts and, you know, advertising on YouTube and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, this is an incredible success.
We actually had a YouTube comment from some sort of troll, like saying, look, you're wasting your time at it. Like, you're not right. Like only 30 people have seen this YouTube video. I'm like, what the hell? Like the only reason you do it is somehow to generate income. It's part of the why this hustle economy that we have, which is because we're in capitalism, is the middle class is being depleted out, right? And so then all of a sudden we have to make this idea of the hustle a virtue, which is like a hyper version of overworking. So now it's like, you only work three jobs? I work six. Like that kind of like. That sucks. That just sucks. Like, but we feel like we have to make it sound virtuous because that's how society has It's this weird Protestant work ethic on acid. On a bad acid trip, not a good one. Kathleen writes, I've been a pastor for 30 years. My brother works for Ford. He claims that I've never worked a day in my life. Oh my God. That's you get paid to drink coffee with people like that. I've heard that about pastors my whole life.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
All right. We're past time. We got to Zoom.
Seymour, it's funny how that we accept as a provocateur or whatever is so limited outside of who people are told are cool visionary provocateurs or whatever. Yeah. Kathleen writes, Neil writes, Kathleen, not even on Sundays.
No.
Ellen writes, hi, Mark and Dan. For doing nothing, I like to pretend I am a 7-year-old approaching the situation.
That's great.
Capitalism has co-opted the idea because adults who approach things as a 7-year-old are better problem solvers. But if you are struggling, try being a 7-year-old yourself. Catherine writes, I do think that there can be great pleasure and value in working alongside friends while telling stories. Totally. And I am basically, that's all my outdoor work has been like that. And it's the thing that makes it enjoyable. And don't think that is just about workaholism. A lot of heavy exploited work under capitalism, cooking, cleaning, sewing, growing food, childcare, hunting, building homes, is work that past people often did together. Yes, yes, yes. At the center of communal life. It was shared. We all understood that this was for the benefit of all.
Well, and it was okay to stop your work to tell a story, which now Amazon tracks and says you're wasting your time.
That's right. Capitalism tends to make those things lonely, exploitative, and or awful.
Yeah.
That's right. Good points. Tyler writes, I think many people are afraid of leisure and sitting alone with nothing to do because it causes them to reflect on their lives and possibly become more aware of how messed up our system is.
Yes,
they probably also feel guilty too with more leisure time because of societal standards. Idle hands are the devil's tools.
Yep.
What a phrase. Ellen writes, Mennonite intentional communities, shared purse situations run into the issue of who gets to go on vacation. But I don't need to tell you that. Way to trigger my trauma response, Ellen.
Yes. Internal Mennonite trauma speak. All right.
I could go off on that one. Seymour writes, like how we accept constant advertising and are even into it in specific ways. But if someone we know shares their work with us on social media, they're seen as shamefully self-promotional. Ellen writes, in the winter is fiddling time.
Right. Yeah.
Just a few more comments. We're way past, but we're going to get to them all now. These kind of faux pas reveal how societal rules are really only reinforce power structures, kind of like no politics, no religion rules of engagement in social settings. Like, how convenient. Back to that actor-entertainer thing that is relevant in so many ways. These human beings give us everything they have, and then we resent and shit on them when they take time to themselves. Yeah. You know, I was reading about an actress, I can't remember which one, who it was, but she was saying why she left acting. And she said, when you're working on a film, it could be 5 months and you're working can work 20 hours in a day. And when people hear that, they complain about they think they're special. It's just, so much moralizing. Ellen writes, Seymour, there's a whole podcast series about Richard Simmons' disappearing. He was just in his house, guys. Then they thought he must be held captive. Nope, he just wanted to be left alone. Not work those. Oh, yeah. Fuck capitalism. That should be our final word. I'm going to go back to that one in a second. Gus writes, my dad recently moved into assisted living, really needs the assistance at this point, and he has tons of guilt about not being productive. And the final word, fuck capitalism.
All right, but it won't be the final word because we'll be back on Friday
to talk
more about this. And so thanks, everybody. Great, great comments. Really fun hearing from y'all. And have a good day.
See you Friday.